Well, at Christmas time, we frequently open the Gospel of Luke and read there in chapter 2 of the multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, "Peace on earth, goodwill to all." And here we are today in August on this 12th Sunday after Pentecost. And the lectionary gives us this gospel lesson. This text where Jesus really shakes things up by, of all things, renouncing peace and upholding division. You'd think that Jesus would seek unity among his believers, not try to, it seems, turn them against each other. So we might ask, in the parlance of our politics over the last several years, is Jesus a uniter or a divider? And I had the accent to ask that too, you know, a uniter or a divider? Well, in this passage, he seems more like a divider. He says some families will be torn apart as some respond to the gospel and others don't. But this text, I think, is clearly not about tearing apart families. We can't read it just on its surface level. Certainly all of his other teachings would fly in the face of that. He is not saying really that he does not bring peace, but he is saying that perhaps the peace he does bring is a deep peace. And to get to that deep peace, decision, engagement, conflict, and sometimes even division is necessary. He is saying perhaps that to follow him is to leave behind some things and to take up other things. He is saying perhaps that some things should divide us, that peace is more than the absence of conflict. Jesus reminds us that there are some things worth dividing over. We see examples of this in religious history. We are Protestants, after all, and protest is the root word of Protestant, as the Reformers divided from the Roman Catholic tradition. The Puritans were separatists who divided themselves from the Church of England and declared that the local church was the church complete, one of the core ideas of our congregational Christian faith. We see this division in secular history. The advent of our own nation certainly is a division from England. And later, sadly, our nation divided for a while over slavery, north from south. Slavery also divided many Christian denominations. The Methodist and the Baptist come to mind. It did not so divide the Congregationalists of the era, because there weren't too many Congregationalists south of the Mason-Dixon line. In fact, many congregational churches, this one included, were involved in the anti-slavery movement, as we were one of the churches breaking federal law of the time to harbor escaped slaves as a church on the Underground Railroad. We see this principle of division to some degree in our own day, as other issues threaten division of religious traditions. Race remains a significant issue in America, and especially in Milwaukee and Wauwatosa, a hangover, I think, in our nation from the days of slavery. And perhaps the next issue we think of in the list of hot-button cultural topics is the place of gay and lesbian people in society and in the church. Most recently, as you know, there's been talk of a split among the Episcopalians, and in our newspaper last weekend was the report of the ELCA Lutheran National Assembly in Chicago as they once again struggled with policy on clergy who are in committed same-sex relationships. We in our congregation and across our association of congregations have seen this play out, and perhaps we have been grateful that we are not in that struggle, that this struggle is not dividing us. And it's not just the gay issue. There are all the other hot-button cultural issues, race, abortion, war and peace, certainly in these days, various issues of the common good of God's people. These are the issues that we read about in the newspaper and we see on television news. These are the issues that confront us in our wider community, issues that are out there. And yet it also turns out, I think, that those issues are in here, in this community, in this room. They are not merely the political issues or even the politically correct issues. These are the real things that some of us struggle with. We in our church have people whose families are interracial and struggle, no doubt, with living in a white-dominated community. We have people who are gay and who are lesbian, and we have people whose family members are gay. We have people who are struggling in their own lives with these cultural issues we read about or see on the news. I think sometimes we have a false sense of peace because we don't talk about these things an awful lot. They make us a little uncomfortable. And when I say we, I don't mean just us in this congregation, just First Church Wauwatosa. I mean our whole association of congregations. The deeper I go into Christian understanding, the more I am aware that the Christian faith has something to say to society as well as to individuals. We tend in the direction we have tended over the last 50 years, in part because of our distinct history. Like any other faith group, we have a distinct history. As most of you know, we are among the churches that did not go into the merger that created the United Church of Christ back in the 1950s. And the main issue was in the emerging UCC, their governance or their polity was thought to be more Presbyterian and less historically congregational, which had been one of the hallmarks of our faith tradition. But there were other issues as well. There was a concern at the time among some about the liberal stances taken by the Social Action Committee of the old General Council of Congregational Christian Churches. So in the split that ensued, our culture here among the National Association, among the NA churches, has been strongly that we should not take stands, as this abrogates freedom of conscience of individual members as well as the authority of local churches to set their own policy. And I don't think that's such a bad thing in our culture. But the way this has worked out inadvertently among our churches is not only that we don't take stands, we don't talk about these issues, we don't engage these issues. I'm told by the current editor of the Congregationalist magazine, that's our national magazine, which we always put a few copies out. We probably need to be doing better at making it available to more of you. I'm told by Jim Eaton, the current editor, that throughout the 1970s, that magazine, The Congregationalist, not once addressed any aspect of the Vietnam War, which strikes me as very surprising, given that that was the cultural topic of that day. Well, in failing to address these cultural issues from a faith perspective, I think we've helped to turn our Christian faith into a merely private affair between individual and God. Now, certainly the Christian faith is indeed in part about one's own individual relationship with God. But moreover, our Christian faith is about community. Both the Old and the New Testaments are testaments of communities and how God is known in community. I think that God cares about the societies that we build. Now, I'm not suggesting that we take stands. You can relax. Take a breath. I know you don't want to hear politics from the pulpit each Sunday, and I don't want to give you mere politics. But we do need to help each other on how to think theologically about what's going on in the world. And especially, we need help on how we treat fellow church members who live with issues of race in their families and friends and schools and workplaces, and really, that's most of us. We need help with our fellow church members who are gay or lesbian or have family members who are so. I think that we can no longer pretend that silence is toleration. I say this out of my growing respect and my deep love for you and for our tradition that has grown in my heart over these last almost 4 years since I joined you. And further, I don't think there are any clear and easy answers to any of these issues. Clearly, there are good people on all sides of these cultural issues. Different Christians understand the biblical witness differently. It's not always clear on what exactly is the, if there is one, the Christian stance on any of these issues. If we go to the Bible to ask what it says about war and peace, about abortion, about race, about issues of sexuality, we have to read the Bible in its entirety, in the richness of its warp and its weave, from the standpoint of the church's traditional insistence that theology be understood from the quadrilateral of scripture, tradition, reason, and experience. You can't just extract a text or two and claim that the Bible speaks out on that issue for all time. Remember, and I would remind you again, abolitionists had great difficulty in the 19th century convincing the American public that slavery was wrong in part because the Bible so clearly says, Paul so clearly says, that slaves should obey their masters. I am concerned about issues of race in our culture and especially in our local community. I note here that our mayor, Teresa Esnes, continues to receive hate mail over the incident now quite a while ago when she hugged Milwaukee Alderman Michael McGee. She says she receives not just critical but respectful mail. I'm hoping she gets some of that as well, but actual out-and-out hate mail, some of it anonymous, including even some death threats. This should give us pause that this is happening in Wauwatosa. And as you perhaps can tell from the language of my sermon, I personally support the full inclusion of gay and lesbian people in the church, including ordination. But I know that some of you disagree with me, and probably strongly, and that's okay. We can disagree and remain in dialogue. We can disagree and remain in covenant. That's the whole motive power of covenant. It holds people in loving relationship beyond creed or idea or doctrine. It holds people in true, heartfelt, soul-to-soul relationship. We need not think alike to love alike. We need more dialogue, I think, more prayer. We need much more light before we can achieve final unity on any of these subjects. And really, I'm not worried about achieving final unity. I think that is not such a good goal. But I am worried about engagement. Engagement of our culture and a deeper engagement with each other. I worry not just about our congregation again, but our whole association of congregations. All of us need to better engage the real issues of real life and do so with the confidence that our real and living God will guide us to a better and deeper and richer place, to a place of true peace, to an experience of that peace on earth we read about earlier in Luke, that peace on earth that we yearn for so deeply. Now, in this text, Jesus says he comes to divide. I don't think these things need to divide us at all. Jesus sometimes teaches in hyperbole. In fact, we congregationalists, among all the other faith groups, I think, are well placed to engage these issues since our governance supports that, since our national body can't dictate the stances of a local church. This frees us, this empowers us to discern what is God's will for our church for the living of these days. The world presses in on us. It pushes us not to division, but to decision of how to be better followers of Jesus Christ in a pluralistic world. It pushes us to engage real life and the real people who struggle in an often difficult world. God, I think, is not an ethereal spirit disconnected from real life. We tend sometimes to overly spiritualize Christian life. Our God is an incarnational God who gets involved in the muck and the mire of real life. Today's text from Hebrews so beautifully recites the heroes of our faith, suggesting that even the most difficult circumstances can be overcome when confronted by people of faith acting in the name of God. All of these, the text tells us, compose a mighty cloud of witnesses so we know that we are not alone. Our God works in and through the created world in and through the disagreements and conflicts and violence of the created order, moving us ever closer to a fuller knowledge of God, which will continue to break forth. In closing, I want to tell you two brief stories that somehow for me are connected. The first is that a little over a week ago Thursday, two friends and myself met up in Chicago to see a play, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. It's now coming to Milwaukee. See it. Not family fair, but see it. And we got there early down into the downtown area, and so we were nosing around. We are all ministers, and one of our trio is from Chicago, and so he was showing us around some of the downtown churches. Now, notice that when ministers go out for recreation, what do? We end up going to churches, you know. Well, among others, we went to Chicago's first Methodist church downtown, the oldest church in Chicago, like us, the first church gathered in Chicago, known as the Chicago Temple. Its sanctuary is open during the day as a place for prayer. As the three of us walked into the sanctuary, I was touched by the handful of people who would come and go to come into the coolness of the sanctuary on that balmy day in downtown Chicago to sit or to kneel in prayer. I took a brochure about the church, and here in part is how they describe themselves. The church is home to a dynamic and truly diverse congregation made up of people of all ages, from the city and suburbs, single, married, with and without children, old, young, and of many races and varied native languages. We welcome all people to the life of this congregation and believe that we are all in need of God's love and grace, and that God, through Jesus Christ, intends the church to be a community that incarnates love, grace, and justice for all people. Holding true to that belief, we welcome and encourage all persons, including persons of all sexual orientations and gender identities, in every aspect of our Christian life together. Our mission is to spread the good news, bear witness to God's love through our actions, bear the fruit of our faith in our actions, and humbly enter into dialogue with other people about the meaning of following Christ today. Now, this is the mission of that congregation. I'm not suggesting it as the mission of ours. That church is an urban church. That church is different in some ways from us. But notice how they've apparently worked through the issues and the things that so often divide people in the wider culture and offer unity, offer a place of prayer and respite for everyone. That's their mission. Our church, like each and every church in our national association, also, I think, has a mission given to us by God. And the goal of any church is to find that mission, its deep gift, and how it might help meet some of the deep need of the world. And when a congregation's deep gift meets a deep need in the world, that's when magic happens. Well, that was a week ago Thursday. This week, here in Wauwatosa, as those of you who live close to the church, close to the village, may have noticed, sewer repair has continued around the village, tying up a lot of traffic. First time in 4 years of living in the heart of Wauwatosa that I have encountered a traffic jam on Church Street, you know. The sewer repair has created detours here and there. And this last week, as repairs on 76th Avenue or Wauwatosa Avenue went further south, they diverted traffic going south down, of all streets, down Church Street. So this week, we had a steady stream of cars right here in front of the church, often backed up, trying to turn left onto the parkway. It felt odd to me as I would walk out of the building at various times of the day to see all this traffic right in front of the church. And I couldn't help but notice it was a greater diversity of cars and of people than we sometimes see. With the nice weather most days, some people had their windows down, and I could hear everything from classical music to rap. It seemed that a road detour has suddenly brought a rich diversity of people to Church Street. It wasn't exactly downtown Chicago, but it was a rich cross-section of our community brought temporarily to our doorstep. Part of me wishes that the detour down Church Street would become permanent. But I took that as a sign that even when traffic isn't detoured, the world presses in on us and God beckons us, inviting us to become more of the church in the world, to engage the world. God beckons us to take the chance and to have the faith that we can dialogue about where God is calling us to help build up the common good of God's people. That our love for each other will hold us up in the places where we disagree. That we need not think alike to love alike. That by truly following Christ, Christ will bring us through that which divides us and divides society into a deeper, richer, more sustaining unity. A unity and a peace that only God can give, not the world. And in that process, our good God will bring us more light and more truth that we will need to minister to the world in the living of these.